I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. It wasn't all that long ago, our guest this hour will say, that teachers were heroes. And all of a sudden that changed so dramatically. Teachers are now characterized as greedy and selfish. What happened? Tim O'Driscoll has been teaching for 36 years at Arrowhead High School. That's a long time. So we decided we would invite a master teacher to take on this issue. He was also the baseball coach for many, many years. And I must add that it was quite a winning baseball season. He went to school at Arrowhead High School. He also went to UWM, where he was a pitcher for the baseball team. They have a good team. And also, he was captain of the team. He loves baseball, and he also now has been the official scorekeeper hired by MLB for the Milwaukee Brewers. So we're going to be looking at a lot of these issues. What's happened to the teaching profession since Act 10? I've always wondered if there are fewer young people who are going into teaching right now. Those of you who know teachers, who are teachers, do you feel as though there's been a sea change in the way you're perceived? Are you no longer heroes, but now you're something else? Man, it's not good. Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655. Hi, Tim. Thanks for being with us.
Kathleen, thanks very much for having me today.
Yeah, I gave you a big assignment here to take on the whole teaching profession and public schools and all. But you were the one who said this. It wasn't long ago you were heroes, and now you're greedy and you're selfish. Do a lot of teachers feel that way, and why?
Well, I don't think there's any question that the image that teachers have, that from the public, that what the public gives them has changed. And Kathleen, there can't be any debate either about the fact that strong public schools are in essence what makes this country great. And you can go back historically and understand the fact that schools are critical for Americanizing kids, to teach them the democratic process and so on. And of course, so much that was done with immigrants, but it is still the place that is so critical for the improvement and the continued development of this country. And I don't know if you get anybody on the air that would say, I hate strong public schools. Even people who support private schools, which are fine, why would you not want strong public schools? Public schools are an investment in the community, for heaven's sakes, and they reflect the community, and schools serve it, for heaven's sakes. These are the kids who graduate, who go out and live in our community. And schools are really a melting pot.
Yes, they are.
We have kids coming from all different areas, all different groups. So, to me, what we need to do is to unify all of the resources in the community to make our schools a better place. Now, schools need a healthy climate. And if you look at schools that are successful, they tend to come from healthy communities. And when you see schools that are having problems, well, look at the community in which they're in. In many cases, the community is fractured. The community is in trouble. They are broken. So along comes Act 10, and we're going to unite everyone. Well, guess what? To me, it released an anger movement like I've never seen in my life. Criticism, in my opinion, that wasn't rational, and it became almost a negative or a non-intellectual movement, and that to me is very, very hard to understand. Now, if I were to describe the general feeling I think the public had about teachers 4 or 5 years ago, they were dedicated and hardworking and honest and passionate people. Because you know what? Every single public school teacher knows this. We are getting the most precious resource that any single family has, their child. And their child is walking in our classroom. And the vast majority of public school teachers that I know and that I deal with, their major goal is, when that child leaves that room, to be a better person. to have skills, to understand things, and you know what? To understand themselves. And that's what our job is. And every single student has unique skills, and I'm not talking Pollyanna here. Again, I was in the classroom 36 years. I had over 10,000 students.
Oh, my gosh, Kim.
Because I taught, for the most part, a semester course in economics. Then I added AP macro and so forth and so on. But so I know about kids, and I can understand them. And as a teacher for 36 years, I just didn't teach economics. I knew that kids needed help, and I know some parents aren't going to like to hear this, but high school is a really tough time for a lot of kids. Now, when parents think back, they say, well, it's the greatest time of your life.
I know,
you've got
too,
no
right?
mortgages to pay. You've got no bills coming in. You don't put food on the table. But remember, what were you like when you were 15 and 16? Did you have a big ego? No. Did you think much of yourself? No. You're trying to fit in, and every kid's going to fit in. He may fit into a positive group or a negative group, but they are going to fit in somewhere. And somebody's too short and someone's too tall. And kids today can be brutal. Mm-hmm. And social networking can be brutal. So what I did is I became a mentor for as many kids as I possibly could. And I'm a very good listener. And kids would just come in because they needed someone to talk
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get them to answer their own questions by questioning them about stuff they were asking me. And I felt that that was one of my responsibilities. And I loved doing it. Teaching was never a job. It was a way of life. It was a way of life from early in the morning till late at night, and it never ended. And it went on weekends and so on, and I loved every single minute of it. I'm always amazed, Kathleen, how people who are not in teaching are experts in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school. I could tell you mm-hmm. how teacher. You don't know. Teaching is an art. It's not a science.
Very hard.
And it's very, very difficult, but boy, is it satisfying. There isn't anything else for me. I knew in the fifth grade I wanted to become a teacher, and just the fact that you want to help people, you want to make them better, and you want to be there for them. And I would never disrespect somebody else's job. If someone is a stockbroker, I teach economics, so I understand the market, but I don't know what stockbrokers do every single minute of every day. I don't know what lawyers do when they're outside of the courtroom every single day, or my son-in-law, who is an engineer. I don't know what they do all day, and I'm certainly not going to attack them, and I'm certainly not going to make fun of them. Remember, every single teacher is a college graduate. Mm-hmm. These aren't people that just fell off a potato truck and said, oh, I think I want to teach suddenly. Well, they go through a whole process. They go through a lot to become a teacher. And I don't know if people know this, but about 57% of all the teachers in the state of Wisconsin have master's degrees. These people are highly educated people. They aren't just someone who just walked in and said, you know, I think that I want to go into teaching. Now, if you ask people today, what will they say? Well, these teachers are lazy. They're overpaid.
They work 9 months a year.
They work and they're
right.
off all the time. They
right.
get these breaks. They're selfish. They're greedy. That's an easy job.
Yeah.
And I know that the vast majority of people have a teacher or two that changed their life. They said the right thing at the right time, or were there when they needed them, building up their confidence. So when this came through, it was a wave of anger and hatred that I was really shocked. And there are a lot of people who don't understand why people are so disrespectful now towards the teaching occupation.
Why are they? What is the genesis for it? Is there a movement, as some have said, that public education in some people's minds should be done away with, and there should be a business model, and we should be able to have for-profit schools, and there's money to be made from education, or is that really a stretch?
No, I don't think so at all. And I think, in fact, after this act was passed, there was a propaganda machine that started, and it went through the whole state like wildfire. And the fact is that schools should be run like a business is run, which is the craziest idea in the world.
You say it's more like a family. Schools are more like a family.
Very, very much they are. And even though I taught in a very large school, there are people in our school and students who feel very, very much like they are a family. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about people doing schools like a business, there's on YouTube, there's a little story called The Blueberry Story. And let me just do it real quickly here.
Sure.
There's an author named Jamie Vollmar, who's from Texas, and he was after public schools, and he hated them. And he said he knew three things. Schools needed to change, and the problem was the teachers and the administration. And the third thing, they needed to be run like a business. So he began to go through Texas and making speeches and stuff. And one day he ran into a 32-year teaching veteran of a school in Texas. She was an English teacher. And he was up there talking about total quality, zero defects. And she raised her hand. And he ran again the Great Midwest Ice Cream Company. And she asked him, she said, "Mr. Vollmar, do you have grade A blueberries in your ice cream?" "No, we don't put grade A. We put triple. We have triple A stuff, and we don't accept anything but. We don't accept anything but the best." She said, "Well, what would happen if the blueberries came in and they weren't all perfect?" "Well, I wouldn't accept them." Well, then she said, "Well, you know what? I teach in a public school, and we take them all, big, small, rich, poor, hungry, abused. Some had no sleep, some are brilliant, some can't read, some have English as a second language, some have poor vision, a lot of them have special needs, they have poor hearing, they have ADHD. We can't throw ours away.
Mm.
We have to take every single one of them, and we do with open arms, because that's what we're there for. We're there to help them." And so he said she changed him completely, and he said, schools should not be run like businesses. Schools are there to provide education for students. They're not there so that people make money. Schools should not be a profit-seeking area. Also, we don't know the impact that we have on kids. It's more than just a standardized test score, Kathleen, for heaven's sakes. And I know, don't get me wrong, we should be accountable. I have no problem with any of that. But to only say it's for a test score, that is just insane. I get letters, and I'm not trying to brag about Tim O'Driscoll here, but I get letters from students who I have had who tell me things that made a difference in their life.
I know you too.
And I even brought
one in
today.
Plus, you're a baseball coach all of these years,
forever.
Too.
And I loved every single second of it. That's when I just got in April from a young woman who was in my AP macro class. She went on to she just got her doctorate now in nursing. And she's going to deal with pediatric care. And she said that comments that I made to her over and over and over again, "You can do anything you want to. You're much more brilliant than you think you are." And I tried to build up her self-confidence. That's just an example of the fact that it isn't just test scores.
No,
please understand that. We are not putting out widgets. These are human beings we're dealing with. Bean counters can't come in and look at what we're doing here, because it might be 7, 8, 10, 12 years before the real impact of what happened to a student when they're in your classroom is known. And so with this craze now, let's test everything. And again, I'll be accountable to anybody. They can come in my classes whenever they wanted to. But let's realize that we have professional people who are doing the teaching, who know what they are doing. Do we have problems? Of course we have problems. But so many of the problems are directly linked to things people don't want to talk about. Why is the city of Milwaukee, some of the schools in trouble? Because of the poverty in the city of Milwaukee. How many kids come to school hungry? How many kids come to school without parental support and don't know the basic words and things when they come into schools, for heaven's sakes? But of course, we can't talk about that. You mentioned that I was I've been a supervisor of student teachers. I have been in 27 schools in the greater Milwaukee area in the last 3 years where I supervise student teachers. I'm in schools every single day. I know these schools from Rufus King, Riverside, Bayview, Milwaukee, Hamilton, Arrowhead, Oconomowoc, Port Washington, West Allis Central, and Hale, Tosa East, Tosa West, Franklin, Watertown, Brookfield Central, Cudahy, Mesmer, Whitnall, Oak Creek, Kettle Moraine, Fort Atkinson, Muskego, Menominee Falls, Cedarburg. That's a pretty good list.
It's a pretty good list, Tim.
I know what's going on in those classrooms because I'm there.
Right.
And I have spent literally 50, 60 hours at each one of these schools. So don't call and tell me what's happening. I know what's going on.
Do you think that, and we're going to go to phone calls, we have tons of them coming in, a lot of Facebook messages. Bear with us for just a minute, audience, we'll be right there. You work with student teachers. I've been trying to get a handle on whether or not, because the teaching profession has undergone some changes and this lack of respect, which I believe is true as well, if it has resulted in fewer students deciding that they're going to become teachers, Tim, do we know if that's true or not?
I have talked to, I promise people I would not give their names and all of that, but I have talked to people in the last couple weeks at St. Norbert's, which has a large school of education, at Whitewater, at Cardinal Stritch, at UWM. Without a doubt, there are less people who are going into the field. And one of the things that really frightens me is that 58% of the teachers right now in teaching across the United States are between 48 and 64. So that means a large number of people are going to be getting out of teaching eventually because of an age factor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things also about teaching, and I'm not comparing it to being a fireman or a policeman, but only in this vein, firemen and policemen in families, they tend to be firemen and policemen. Well, teachers do the same thing.
Yes, they do.
My wife is a teacher. My daughter is a teacher. And it stays, it's kind of, it gets in your blood and they see what your parents thought about it. And before coming in here, I called a number of teachers and many of them would not tell their children to go into teaching because of the tremendous change and what they're being asked to do. And that is very, very sad. And again, I don't have exact numbers, but I can tell you that the numbers are going down because of what's happened in the state.
Let's welcome phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Tim O'Driscoll is our guest. Tim taught for 36 years social studies. He was advisor for the student council, and he was a very successful baseball coach. That team was really doing well for a long time. He's also been a director of the Center for Economic Education at UWM. At Lakeland College is where he's doing that now, supervising student teachers for years now. So as you heard him list all of the schools he's been in, he's got teachers, student teachers going to all of those areas. He's also, we should say this, where are you now? Almost 2,000 games. He's the official scorekeeper for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, I'm really, really close. This season, and I don't know the exact number, but probably 25 more games or so would be my 2,000.
Ooh, game. Are you going to have a party or what?
I'm not sure.
I've got to do something.
I think the players will keep on booing and because they don't like the decisions I make very often.
You're just doing your job, sir.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What's happened to the teaching profession and to public schools? We thought we would ask a master teacher this hour over the past few years, particularly after Act 10. Tim O'Driscoll is our guest. He's too modest to read this himself, but he mentioned the letter that he received from a student. Let me just read a portion of it. Dear Mr. O'Driscoll, I'm a former student of yours. He just received it, and I'm writing to say thank you. I took AP Macroeconomics with you in 2000. I can't imagine you would remember me, but he does, considering the multitude of students you've taught, some 10,000, and coached over the years. But it may jog your memory to know that my former name was, can we say her name?
Sure.
Marie Walsh, and I was a year or so younger than most of my classmates. She graduated from the University of Washington, doctorate in nursing practice, specializing in pediatrics. And at the time of graduation, she wrote to him saying, I want to express my gratitude to the people who have supported me along my academic journey, and you are one of them. I have very fond memories of you as a teacher, including your jolly demeanor, love of baseball, movies, and especially popcorn. Tim, where's the popcorn? We need to have popcorn here. And there... Where is it? There is one memory when he wrote a letter of recommendation for college. You handed it to her and you said, you have more potential and are capable of more great things than you can even imagine. And that has stuck with me through the years and has rung in my head many times, especially when I needed courage. That's what teachers do. Let's go to phone calls. Lynette in Milwaukee. Hi, Lynette.
Yes. Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hey, I was calling to say, I was actually in Greendale, I think it was, during the fight over Act 10, and I witnessed some stuff that just made my heart sink. You know, I always thought teachers were great, and they're special, and they teach you stuff, and you're supposed to be respectful. I saw parents and other people, I don't know who they were, yelling at the teachers. The teachers were trying to testify about, you know, the impact, calling them babies, whiners. Mm-hmm. Saying they were greedy. I never saw anything like that in my life. And I thought, how then can their kids respect the teachers if this is the kind of hatred and anger this act has brought out, you know, toward teachers? I mean, it was just the most sickening thing I had ever seen. And so I think that has a lot to do with kind of here in Wisconsin anyway, really bringing down how people feel about teachers. And then one other quick thing, the private schools, like he was saying, many of those schools, some of those teachers, they haven't even learned how to teach kids. They just might have a little background in something. So they don't know the principles, as he was saying, of the art of teaching kids.
Mm-hmm. Some of those schools are using Teach for America teachers or using people who some have not graduated from college yet.
No, and so many of the teachers are in programs now. Like, I don't mean to be on kind of rocket ship or other places, but they, in fact, don't hire teachers with more than 2 years experience on purpose because it keeps the cost so low. And then they spend, I think, 40-45% of the day in front of computers. Now, not interactive computers. See, one of the things that people who are not in education, I don't think, understand sometimes, computers are a great tool. They are a tool to enhance learning. They aren't the way to learn. And so, like at Arrowhead and schools like that, we would use computers and technology to create a movie or a scene, or kids could be very creative in what they did. What the rocket ship does is very passive, sit in front of a computer trying to learn the lesson. And I understand that education is a service industry that is salary-driven by teachers. I understand that. But also, don't misunderstand the importance of what that teacher can do in the classroom and in the school themselves. And that's one of, you know, every single occupation may have different costs that are different. And one of the things that is in education is it's a service industry. And people, I think, deliver the message much better than going to a computer screen. And especially people that don't have experience. Major tests have now been done. The greatest teachers are in their 20th year. They're phenomenal because, Kathleen, they see that kid who's got anger building up in them, and they know how to handle that, and they see it ahead of time. Or the kid who's really shy, and they know how to handle it. Or you've got a disruptive student, and when you get more experience, you know how to handle them.
Right.
And experience is very important.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Lynette. Pat is next in Maribel. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Pat.
I was a 28-year public school employee. I was not a teacher. I serviced children with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I retired before Act 10, so it didn't have direct impact on me. But I continue to volunteer weekly in my local elementary school, and I can vouch for the fact that morale is extremely low. Now, the teachers do the best they can to not show that to the children, but when you get just the teachers together, you can tell how much they've been impacted and how much they feel that the public really dislikes them.
So
and
what...
I think that's very sad. I have a granddaughter who's in fourth grade, and she's academically gifted, and she's talked about being a teacher, and I, for one, will actively work and do my best to make sure she does not.
Oh, that's sad.
Pat, don't do that, because if she has a passion, and I was telling Kathleen earlier, I had a passion since the fifth grade, mm-hmm. and I knew I was going to become a teacher. I just knew it, and I would just hate to see people gifted in that way not go into a field. Things go and pendulums swing back and forth. And let's just hope, Pat, that by the time your grandchild is that age, that we see some sanity and that things will improve dramatically.
So when she talks about seeing teachers sitting around a table talking about some of these issues, what are teachers concerned about? What has been the direct impact of Act 10 on teachers, Tim?
Well, you know, I think people who are not in teaching think that it's all economic.
Mm-hmm.
They think that because teachers are now paying half of their retirement and are paying a lot more for their health care than they ever did, that's what it's all about. Honestly, to a teacher that I talked to again, and I've talked hundreds mm-hmm. of them. Understand, I'm in, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not trying to beat that point to death, but I'm in schools continually. The lack of respect and the fact that people in different communities now can't be on the same golfing teams anymore because of the bitter anger.
Ugh.
And that people don't go to the certain book clubs anymore, and that people in church don't talk as much anymore. If teachers could get a feeling back that they are respected, and again, that to me is much more important. But I think the public thinks it's all about money. It's not. It really isn't. Now, do all of us want to make more money? Of course. If we came to you, Kathleen, and said, we're going to give you an extra $25,000. Oh, no. Of course, we all want extra money.
I would take it, Tim.
we all do. But it is much, much more than that. It's the perception that suddenly they're selfish, and because they desperately care about those kids that are in their classrooms. And I have two grandchildren right now that are in first and second grade. I've got a younger grandchild that's 2 years old, and I go to their school one day a week, and I help with the recess and the lunch duty.
Do.
Oh,
you're a hit.
I have to, and I have to see my grandkids at least four or five times a week. But I would do anything for them to have great teachers, and they're in a great school, Stormont, and the teachers are incredible there. And I tell them that every time I see them, every time. I mean this because they need to hear some positives.
Mm-hmm. What about sitting around the table? What rights or abilities to be able to affect the classroom, or how many classes they'll teach?
Sure, sure.
How have they been affected, teachers, in that regard?
There is a great difference based on what school system you're in. If you have a very, very good superintendent who knows what's going on, and a school board that supports them. See, we have some people who suddenly want to run for school board because they've got an axe to grind or because of what other reason, I don't know. But if you're an established school that's done very, very, very well, conditions are different, and a lot of teachers are fearful, and I'll tell you why. They have no say over anything anymore. Now, one of the great things, and I know I'm bragging a little bit about the school that I taught at, is the fact that I was department chair, and I supervised and evaluated the 16 teachers in my department.
Oh.
The principals did some of it, but mm-hmm. I did most of it. And the teachers knew I was a teacher just like them,
mm-hmm.
and we worked on making them better, not to snoopervise them, not to look for something silly or to ask for a dog and pony show, but to really look at what they were doing. So when we would bring a new idea in, we would discuss it as department chairs, and we had them for each department. And we would look at the positives and the negatives of something new coming in. And it made us strong, mm-hmm. because when you see schools who suddenly swallow an idea that they went to a conference with and swallow it whole, well, we would just take the parts that fit our philosophy and make slight changes. But now there is no discussion. And a lot of teachers are afraid of stating an opinion because they could be let go. And there is nothing that anybody can do. There are no collective bargaining rights except for wages, and that's it. And those are very, very limited. So when people think of collective bargaining rights, there's a lot of things that go to them, and the curriculum can change, and they could say to you, you're a seventh grade teacher, you're going to teach third grade next year. Well, you've been teaching seventh grade, your people love you, they love you. I don't care, you're going to third, and that's just the way it is. Okay. So a lot of it depends on the superintendent and the principals and the school board.
Yeah. Thank you, Pat, for the call. Troy and Eagle. Hi, Troy. Troy?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thanks for bringing up this topic, Mr. Driscoll. So I will agree with you that during Act 10, there was a lot of anger and there was a lot of anti-intellectual behavior. But I have to tell you, the majority of that behavior that I saw came from public sector unions. The behavior that was exhibited on TV and the screaming and yelling and chanting and storming of the Capitol, frankly, cast a really poor light on the public sector unions. And I think a lot of whatever bad feelings there are towards teachers right now, I think teachers have to take some responsibility for some of that ill will.
Thanks, Troy, for the call.
Okay, I just wondered, do you think that that teachers did not have the right to go to Madison, did not have the right to state their opinion? Are teachers supposedly second-class citizens, or because we're public employees, we didn't have that right?
Troy is gone.
Oh.
That's all right. You can leave it there. Thank you, Troy, for your call. Let's go to Frank in Onalaska. Hi, Frank.
Hi. I think that last call just started to touch on some of the bigger issues there that I wanted to pose. Mm-hmm. You know, I appreciate that most of the people that have called are teachers, and the objective of a teacher is to present both sides, you know, in a polite fashion. But I think what I wanted to ask the teacher, and he's not maybe quite in the public domain again, but how do you balance that very sensitive aspect of teaching, you know, in your case, economics, and the bigger question here, who the real enemy is? You know, and maybe you're not a public teacher anymore and you're in a higher position, not subject to quite as much scrutiny or even dismissal. But the real issue is there is an attack coming from the right wing, the conservative and generally Republican Party, attacking public education, the core standards, taking funding away through the voucher program. The real enemy is this section of on the right, although it's also exemplified by the mayor of Chicago, a Democrat, who also sees a role of privatizing and profitizing public education because it's the next thing to make money on. And how do you balance, you know, a fair and liberal-minded approach to teaching the issues when you really do have to get angry and call out the enemy that is?
Tim.
Education in this country is a $500 billion endeavor. Notice I didn't say business because it's not a business in my opinion. $500 billion. There are a lot of capitalists who I believe in, by the way. I teach the market. I believe in the market. I am a free market guy. But there are a lot of people who run hedge funds and places like that who are looking for new ways to make profit, make money. And they are suddenly drooling because they know the amount of money they can make by going into very poverty-ridden areas, showing the test scores, which are terrible. Just let us in here. We'll turn this thing around, and I will guarantee you that they will be a failure. If you remember in 1989 and 1990, vultures were going to save Milwaukee. Vultures were we're going to do everything that was possible. And now the new thing is to allow in private school settings with a private school for profit, along with technology. And boy, are they going to solve the problem. Well, just like vultures didn't make it, this new one is not going to make it either. And making money off of educating children, I think, is wrong. I'm sorry. And again, there's no bigger market guy than I am. But we are not turning out widgets. We're not manufacturing some little product. These are human beings. And the idea of making profit, making money off of a school, it's, I think, totally ridiculous.
Thank you, Frank, very much for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. I was telling you, Tim, we had a lot of Facebook comments. I'm going to read several of them now. If there are things here you want to comment on after we pause, do so. We asked the question on Facebook, and we've still asked it. So go to Facebook and answer this question, because I don't think we've talked about this very much. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're talking about the impact that Act 10 has had on teachers in the state of Wisconsin. Catherine writes, negative. I know of several bright and talented young adults who had considered public education as their career. They would have made very fine educators. They're now saying, no way. Lack of appreciation for public sector workers, the busting of the education unions, negative opinion toward teachers fostered by politicians. Please note that money was not a factor. John, almost everybody writes that it's had a negative effect, very negative. While I'm of the opinion that unions need to be brought down a peg or five, this wasn't the answer. Eliminate tenure for primary and secondary schools if you want, but Act 10 has been horrible for teachers. Brad writes, we're on a slow race to the bottom with Mississippi and Asia. How do we compete? According to the governor, we got to be like them wherever that leads us. We'll read more as we continue and take more phone calls at 800-486-8655. This is the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to we got a lot of phone calls coming in, Tim. Let's go next to Gary in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Gary.
Afternoon. Couple things. There's a tendency for a lot of people to value education in the abstract, but there a lot of times are threatened by the intelligence of people that are really educated. Sidney Harris, a long time ago, wrote that one of the problems with schools is we're asking the teachers to be parents, and it's really hard to teach character in schools, especially when a lot of it's already been formed before the kids get to school. And the second thing is, none of the schools that I've seen or been involved with teach assertiveness training. I didn't get that until I was in my later years in college and part of my minor.
Mm-hmm.
But assertiveness training, the basis for assertiveness training is respect, not only for self, but for other people as well.
Yeah, thank you very much, Gary. It is, when you think about it, there are so many skills required, people skills and psychological skills, to be able to get a student to really perform. It's a very complicated job being a teacher, I think.
Yeah, it is very, very much so. But as I said earlier, it is an art.
Mm-hmm.
And this will sound kind of sad, but I have gone in with some student teachers, and after seeing them a few times, I have tried to talk them out of going into teaching.
Really? Interesting.
And I really, really have.
Huh.
And unlike the idea that also people think that that schools don't ever get rid of teachers, I had a couple of people in our department over a pretty long period of time who we asked to leave who were not doing the job anymore. And I think people think that in schools that teachers stay forever and ever and ever, whether they're horrible. And I can't speak for every school, but there are people who should not be teachers. And I thought I was providing a service to some of these kids, and I told them, I don't think you're there. And yes, you can make changes. Yes, you can make improvements. But there's something about your personality that you can deal with other people and some people can't. And there are, and in teaching, you got to deal with a lot of different personalities.
Yeah. My first day, I'm trained as a teacher as well. And I was doing substitute teaching in the Chicago suburbs for a while.
That's tough.
I walked in, and it was my first assignment. It was an English class. I'm trained in English and speech and drama. I walked into the class. I'm, you know, thinking, I don't know what we were talking about, Shakespeare or something like that. And I said my first five words, and the whole class got up out of their seats and walked out of the door. Oh, my gosh. It was, I'll never forget that day.
Oh, what do I do next?
I know.
Help. Help.
I know. So it does take, as you said, it takes experience.
Yes, it really does. It really does.
Yeah, it's not easy. Thank you very much, Gary, for the call. John in Windsor, hi.
Hi, Kathleen, and I have to say, I also graduated with a degree in teaching and was hoping that I could teach, but in 1982, there just were no teaching positions available. Mm. So I actually started working in the public sector. Mm. And I think that one of the things that we're missing is that all public and sector employees were affected by Act 10. And it's quite ironic that this week, I work in a building downtown for the state, and there's this big banner saying Public Employee Appreciation Month or week. And I have to tell you, I thought, I'm not really appreciated at all. And one of the effects is that we're losing a lot of really, really talented individuals that know systems and programs and services. And as they're leaving, we're getting people that are coming in that really don't have that institutional knowledge. And then what happens is the public does not get the service that they want as fast as they want, and then they complain about public employees without really understanding that these are the people that are actually making sure that you're getting the services, the government services that you want. I've heard the story about how there's a cot in the back room and we have our five naps a day. And,
oh, my gosh. You know, you've heard
that? This is the kind of stuff I hear from people all the time.
Wow.
And it's like, hey, it's not like that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I work overtime and mm-hmm. I don't get compensated because it's important for me to do my job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the call. There is something. It's hard to make general statements, but people don't go into the teaching profession to make a lot of money.
No.
Because there isn't a lot of money to be made, nor do they go into public sector. There is something to be said about a life of service, which I think teachers do. You know,
very
you're
much
serving
so.
People.
Now, my wife and I and our children have a nice life, but by no means am I wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. But I also think there's more to life than just dollars, for heaven's sakes. And the satisfaction that you get when a student gets something and you see that in their eye, there's nothing like
nothing
that.
Nothing like it.
They're honestly, people, again, don't get it, but there's nothing like that. And you see them grow and you see them become great adults and stuff. And honestly, it makes you feel really wonderful.
Yeah, it does. Pete from Madison, thank you very much. Happy Public Employees Appreciation Month, John. Pete from Madison emails, my opposition isn't the teacher. It's the fact that these schools want more and more money each year and continuously raise my property taxes. When that's not enough, they push referendums, wanting even more of my money. How schools can cut spending, and if there's a better way to fund schools other than through property taxes. And also, as a baseball fan, he wonders if the instant replay changes this season as it made scorekeeping tougher. That's a good point. We have to get baseball in here somehow.
the replay where they review it, it's gone very, very well. It's gone very efficient. It hasn't taken very long. I have to time it when it begins, when the umpire signals, because where the Major League Baseball is keeping record of how long it actually takes. And if they overturn it, or if you're at a game and they're taking a little bit longer, they normally overturn those. The ones that they do very quickly, 35 seconds and less, they normally don't overturn those. So I think I've had five of them so far.
Huh. Interesting. And what about this? Everybody's asking for money. Schools are asking for money. He can't pay for it.
Well, without question, I understand that my salary and my benefits have come from the taxpayer. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also pay taxes. I think people sometimes think we don't, or that teaching is not really a job or anything. But Wisconsin, the last 6 years, has cut more in the amount of money going to education. The only state that's greater is Georgia. Now, I don't know about you, but my standards are a little bit higher. Nothing against Georgia. I think they're wonderful people. I love driving through on vacation. But they are not what I'm looking for when I look at a state that has a great education system. And we know that public education, going back to 1787 in the Northwest Ordinance. I don't want to be a history lesson here, Kathy, but they actually put out of each section of territory, some of the acreage had to be sold to pay for education. That's where publication comes from, public education, all the way back in the late 1700s. So all of us as a society benefit by educated citizens. And I know sometimes look at your property tax bill and a large amount of it goes to schools, also the tech school in your area. But I think that's part of living in a democracy, and that's part of living in the American system.
Mike in Heartland, hi.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. Hey, OD, this is Mike Torfey.
Hi, Mike. Great.
How do you know each other? Wait a second, let us in. How do you know each other?
OD taught me back 27 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, I just wanted to make a comment about Act 10. I think that I understand where the motivation for the state to press for push back on what they had perceived as unsuccessful negotiations with the association had been. I think it's a little bit of the baby, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Whenever you have a really large organization, and it doesn't matter whether it's a company like Rockwell or the Milwaukee Public School System, you have to have some sort of rules by which you hire and fire and by which you operate. You can't just say we're going to have this sort of capricious approach to things. And the expectation that it's just going to happen because everybody involved is educated is, I think, just a completely bankrupt idea. What you have is exactly what OD has described to you, which is people who are very, very afraid that they're going to be terminated for things like speaking up about an educational policy or about a method of teaching. And the people that you want most involved in your kids' education are the teachers who are actually teaching them. And if they come to you and come to the group with ideas about how to better succeed in that endeavor, you really ought to consider what they're saying. And I hope that you keep at it, OD. You've been a great source of responsibility and appreciation to both myself and my family. So best of luck to you.
Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike, so much for your call. Let's go to Frank. We're getting close to the end of the show, everybody. Hi, Frank in Milwaukee.
Hi. First of all, thanks for this excellent program. And thank you, Mr. O'Driscoll, for being a teacher. I'm a 33-year veteran, retired, and everything you've said today has been spot on from my perspective, including the intricacy of being a teacher, the passion that you need. And I think the most of the many 10, 12 things you could say that are the most important things that a teacher should do is inspiring confidence, because the teachers we love best are the ones who gave us confidence. And particularly when I think about that, I think about our parents, but our teachers too. Mm. And again, I want to thank you for the wonderful words that you said today that hit teaching the nail right on the head.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate that. And thanks for your 33 years as a school teacher.
Thank you so much for your call. Well, Tim, it's about it. Back to baseball, you can go.
Yeah, we have a big series with the Yankees.
I know you do.
Those Yankees.
Those damn Yankees.
Yeah, you're darn right.
I know.
You said it, I didn't.
Bushville wins. We got that in our house. Bushville wins.
I remember it so well.
Yeah, I bet you do. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank
and
you
for
so
all
much.
That
I
you
really
do.
Had, I, had,
you.
I had a great time.
Good,
thank you,
good.
Kathleen.
We had a great time with you. Tim O'Driscoll, our guest this hour of the program, and he taught at Arrowhead High School for 36 years. He was baseball coach and quite a coach. The team the team was a contender for a long time, won state championships, and as I said, he is now the official scorekeeper hired by MLB for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he's working with young people who are going into teaching now. He was director of the Center for Economic Education at UWM and is now doing that at Lakeland College, Milwaukee, supervising student teachers and knows schools and kids and teachers in public education like the back of his hand. So that's it for today. KP, what's coming up on Monday? Can you hear me? I know I can't find my sheet. Yeah, we want to let you know about Monday because I have too many pieces of paper. They're all over the place. Here we go. Thank you. Oh, Michael Lewis is Monday talking about his book Flash Boys. He's written a lot of other books. This follows a group of Wall Street misfits who try to make sense of what's happening to the stock market. We could just add Tim on again. And Craig Gilbert will be with us to discuss his Dividing Lines special report, which you've been seeing in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this week. He spent a long time on it. It's very well done. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this program and for on-air production. Thanks for listening.